Yes, sir. Our next public hearing is change of zone number 1660 Baywood LLC.
Gentlemen, we did have a request from Mr. Schrader on behalf of the applicant that this application being change of zone 1660 and condition use number 1797, both applications for Baywood LLC be consolidated in one public hearing and then decisions made on individual applications so that the public hearing can be possibly shorter and the record be consolidated.
All right, sir, I think we grant that request. Would you like me to read the other application into the record at this time?
I'll do it.
All right, then. Go right ahead.
It'd be so noted that these public hearings to be will be consolidated by consensus. Is that all right?
Yes.
First of the two is change zone 1660, the application of Baywood LLC to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a B1 neighborhood business district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County. Land lying 600 feet north of Route 23, also known as Long Neck Road, and 2,000 feet west of Greensway, the entrance into Baywood community, to be located on 16.45 acres, more or less. The second application is an application of Baywood LLC to consider the conditional use of land in a B1 neighborhood business district for multifamily dwelling structures to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, containing 19.794 acres, more or less, lying north of Long Neck Road, also known as Route 23, and west of Greensway, the entrance into Baywood communities. You note that there is a difference between the acreage. The one portion of the site is 3.3 acres, I believe, is also approximately 3.3 acres, is already zoned B1. Now, we have received several comments, and I believe the commissioners already have a copy of an exhibit booklet. In this case, for those present in the audience, this is an exhibit booklet that is in a three-ring binder, two-inch variety. It also includes a revised site plan. The exhibit booklet contains an executive summary, a project overview, which includes an overview of the current site conditions, a preliminary land use survey, the plus comments, compliance with zoning regulations, reference to the B1 neighborhood business district, the C1 general commercial district, and also the environmentally sensitive development district overlay zone. And then there are a total of 22 figures, which include maps, layout, plans, et cetera. And then there's a statement of conformance and a rendering index for the Baywood Garden Villas, and also a photo index of the Baywood community landscaping. And that is a part of the record and was received on October 26th for incorporation into the record. In reference to change of zone number 1660, we have received comments from the Sussex Conservation District, which referenced that there are four soil types in this application that the applicants would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation, that there are no storm, flood, hazard areas affected, no tax ditches affected, that it's not likely that off-site drainage improvements will be required and on-site drainage improvements will be required. Attached to that is an aerial photograph, a soils map, a soil report, and a reference to prime and other agricultural lands. From the Sussex County Engineering Department and received today, we received a memo making reference to the application, references the size of the parcel, location, etc. The site is located in a county-operated and maintained sanitary sewer district. which is the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. Ordinance 38, construction will not be required. There are no system connection charge credits. There are no sewer service to the parcel at this time. Makes reference to parcel number 270 as being located within the boundary of the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. The sewer service has not been provided to the parcel. That the existing Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District does not have capacity to provide service to the parcel. A letter on file with the Engineering Department dated January 7, 2002 indicates the developer would process wastewater from the parcel through the developer's Baywood facility. Baywood is adjacent to the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District and a privately operated system serves the developer. Parcel 270 must be de-annexed from the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District before the project could connect to the Baywood system. A de-annexation process is similar to the procedure for being brought into a sewer district. It requires advertising, posting of public notices, public hearing, followed by a majority vote of council approving the de-annexation. There will be a fee of $1,500 to cover the cost of advertising and administrative procedures. Prior to beginning the process to de-annex, the County Engineering Department must be provided with a design report from a qualified engineer that shows the whole system serving Baywood has capacity for the addition of the proposed project. And a concept plan is not required. That was signed by John Ashman. I also received an email from Lewis Newman. And it's very short. In regards to the request by Baywood LLC to rezone 16 plus acres to business is not acceptable. Long Neck Road is already overcrowded and more business traffic is not what the area needs. And it's references Mr. Newman's signature. And on that application, that information was for 1660. In reference to 1797 conditional use, we received a similar report from the Sussex Conservation District, although it references seven soil types. The same information on the erosion sediment control practices, maintenance of the vegetation, the same references to the no storm hazard, flood hazard areas and tax ditches affected, that it's not likely to have off-site drainage improvements and it will be necessary for some on-site drainage improvements. And from the County Engineering Department, in summary, I think the comments are the same for this application as they are for the change of zone 1660. So, gentlemen, that's all I have at this time.
All right, sir, we thank you. Before we begin, if there's anyone here with an interest in this application, other than the applicant and his posse here, please feel free to get up, take a look at the exhibits that are here, and just ask that you do so quietly. And with that, the chair recognizes Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, my name is Dennis Schrader. I'm the attorney for the applicant, Baywood LLC, and we have, as Lawrence has described for you, two applications this evening that we're going to present. I have with me some people who have participated in the design and will be presenting testimony this evening. I have Frank Key from Frank Key Communities. I have Jason Palkowitz from McCrone, and I have DJ Hughes from Davis Bone & Friedel, who will address traffic issues. I also have the owner's representative, Mr. Tunnel, who is one of the members of Baywood LLC, and will also be giving a brief summary of the owner's view of this particular project. Gentlemen, this is a unique situation, and I will tell you that it's difficult to follow sometimes. And probably the best thing I can do for you, I hope that you all have these. They are the County Planning and Zoning and Council information sheets that provide you with tax maps that will show you what the zonings are for the three tracts of land that ultimately make up the project that will be known as Baywood Garden Villas. It goes like this. There is a site to the rear, which is an AR1 site. There is a site to the front adjacent to Route 23, which is a C1 site, and there is a B1 site that's part of the same property also on Route 23. So the first application we have this evening is to take the AR1 site and make it B1. Then, if that is approved by you all, to take the B1 site here and here, and with a conditional use, get us to multifamily dwellings. And that is how we get through the various tracts of land that are going to be discussed. When Mr. Key gets up a little later on, he'll have better graphics for you to look at, and he will be able to better explain how all of this comes together. Ultimately, what we have with these three tracts of land, and I should have, if I haven't mentioned it, I'll mention it again, is that the middle tract is currently zoned C1 commercial, the closed zone that no longer exists. The property is located on Long Neck Road, about 2,000 feet west of Greens Way and about an equal number of feet from Route 24. There are three tax map parcels that are involved in this particular project. The change of zone, the AR1 tract to the rear, involves 16.475 acres, and the two B1 tracts, if the first application were granted, would total 19.475 acres. What we're looking to do here is to come in with a conditional use for multifamily dwellings. The total, in fact, would be 143 units over the two tracts of land being made up in the B1 district. And I'm sure Mr. Johnson has already read the material that was submitted in the book, looked at the findings of fact, and is thinking, whoa, what happened to 354? The answer is, Mr. Johnson, that Mr. Schrader made a mistake in preparing the findings of fact, took the total project, which would include the C1 site, and added it into the findings of fact. So it is, in fact, 143 multifamily dwellings over the 19 acres. This property is currently located in low to medium density areas under the comprehensive plan and is in an environmentally sensitive development area. There are levels 1 and 2 under the state strategies map. To the extent that there will be a need for streets, the streets will be brought in under the Sussex County standards. The Inland Bays Preservation Company is available to provide wastewater treatment and disposal. Tidewater is available for water. There are no wetlands on site, and we have submitted to you a fairly extensive package of material relating to both applications that will include something in the neighborhood of 22 exhibits. And in particular, there are graphic renderings at the end under what's called the rendering index and for photo index that will show the site as we would hope to be able to develop it for the benefit of the Long Neck area. Excuse me. With these thoughts in mind, I'd like to bring Mr. Key up, who will provide some interesting information for you concerning the Long Neck area, how this particular project will result into the infilling of this community, and will otherwise give you some of the surrounding conditions and projects, demographics that are appropriate to your consideration of these two applications.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a clarification first before we proceed?
Yes, sir.
We have all these different zonings in the C1, and we're not talking about the C1 tonight. Is that
the C1 application was previously approved, is not a part of the applications for this evening.
So we're just talking about the first AR1, and then we're going to talk about whether if some point in time we agree the AR1 should be a B1. Then we're just talking about the two B1 sections. And the pieces that are C1, you're showing that just for illustration purposes of how it might look.
Correct.
So we're not doing a site plan approval or review for the C1.
Actually was a previously approved site plan for the C1 area, and I believe it remains in the illustrations. But the three pieces together will wind up being developed.
But for the purposes of the commission and the public tonight, we're just looking at the The A1,
the B1, and the conditional use.
And the B1.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Frank Key with Frank Key Communities. I'm a planner, sometime developer, and a landscape architect as well, registered in the state of Virginia. Basically, this is an infill application, and that's what I'm going to try to demonstrate with the first exhibit here. This area that's in sort of this red color and these gray areas, this is the Sussex County Functional Classification Map. It's interesting, these gray areas are areas that DLDOT in 2006, when they did these maps, classified these gray areas as small urban areas. And the site happens to be within one of those. They did it because in the year 2000, in the census, that area right there, as well as these others, had populations of greater than 5,000 people. We don't know how much greater, we just know that it was greater than 5,000, that's what they said. So we undertook to study a little bit of a larger area. Basically, that green circle that you see there is a 4-mile diameter. So this area that we drew a kind of a boundary around is what is essentially where commercial draws on there. The crossroads of 523 and 24 essentially is like the crossroads of the municipal area. And I think you'll recall that in 2003, the comprehensive plan at the time advocated development in or near municipalities for developing areas that were sort of known developing areas by virtue of their population and characteristic, and this was one of them. The new comprehensive plan does the same thing. It advocates the same thing, as you know. This is that same area blown up a little bit bigger. And what we did was we took sort of the comprehensive plans. There's a map in there called Developed Lands, and we took it a bit further. We looked at everything that has developed since the comprehensive plan was done. But we went back as far as we could in 2004, and plus we took into account everything that's been approved here, which is all in two shades of yellow. The darker yellow things are more approved than the lighter shades of yellow. And the site is, of course, this little sort of gumdrop shape right there at the crossroads. The site is surrounded by development. There's a church on one side. There's medium-density residential on two sides of the AR1 portion in particular. And there's high-density residential or commercial across the street. In fact, the residential right across the street, the townhouses are about roughly 8.5 homes per acre. The proposal for this property is altogether 354 homes. When you look at the C1 portion of it, it's 143 homes on the AR1 portion and the B1 portion. And then, so the bottom line is that the site is surrounded by development. And it's interesting to note that this particular tax assessment district, which is a little bit bigger than that portion that we drew there, has grown at a rate that's 35% greater than the next fastest growing district and represents about 22% of all the building permits issued in the county. Long Neck is virtually a town. It's obviously not incorporated, but virtually a town. That land area right there is about 41 square miles. It's about 26,600 acres. There, in this area, there are 48,000 square feet of existing office space, 291,000 square feet of retail space, about 67,500 square feet of industrial space. It has a total homes, and this was hard to do. We worked with county staff, GIS staff upstairs. We talked to Mr. Lane's division. We went round and round over statistics, but basically we worked with AECOM too, who you met before from Washington, the market analysts. There are a total of about almost 15,000 homes of all kinds in that area bounded by that pink border right there. There are 7,700 existing households, meaning people that live there year-round. There are a total of almost 17,000 people who live there year-round. And then in the season, there's a growth of almost 100%. It goes to almost 33,000 people within that border in the season. And the site happens to be right in the middle of it. So having said that, that is kind of the site is almost the hole in the donut. The other thing about this area is there's very the vacancy rate in terms of commercial is currently 2.1%. It's a very healthy area in terms of commercial. In fact, if anything, it's a little bit underserved because normally you would have a higher vacancy rate. Even a 4 or 5% is still very, very healthy. So there's clearly a demand for neighborhood kind of commercial, which is not part of the zoning application, but is part of the plan. And office space is, in fact, zero. There's no vacancy out there. Whatever's been built has been absorbed. With that in mind, in terms of the comprehensive plan, one more point about that. One thing that's not being built in the area, and this is especially the bottom line on the rezoning and the conditional use portion, there are no affordable, or maybe it'd be better to call it achievable, apartment-style homes or flats at all. This is not proposed to be rental. It's a fee simple purchase. But there are none of those being built. There are some Section 8 homes in the area, and, of course, on the peninsula, there are some stacked flats out there, but they're very much more expensive. The target price here is in the neighborhood of $175,000. Robert will testify, Robert Tunnell, that he's being asked consistently about these kinds of homes in the market. You can't buy them. He hasn't provided them so far either and would like to here. And then the buyers are also looking for very low-maintenance homes, and these are about as low-maintenance as you can get. They're, you know, three-story walk-up with elevators. Everything is maintained by the homeowner association or Mr. Tunnell, as the case may be. And that's the reason for the application, essentially. In terms of the comprehensive plan, this proposal is in conformance with that plan. It is in a growth area, the environmentally sensitive developing area, that does allow low to medium density in B1. The density that's being proposed, I think on the portion of the site that's at issue, is about 7.5 homes per acre. The townhouses across the street that Mr. Palkowitz will get into a little bit later is about 8.5. So it's a lower density than that. In fact, the buildings have been organized so that there's a transition between the medium density that's on two sides of the AR1 property and the other buildings that are up front that are a little bit bigger. The smaller buildings are in the back. It is, of course, as Dennis mentioned, in spending levels 1 and 2, where they intend development to be. Both Route 23 and Route 24 are major collector roadways. Sewer and water service are available to the site. And an interesting, one other interesting note, I'm going to be as brief as I can tonight, is that in the community design element of the comprehensive plan, it talks about densities. And one of the things it discusses is the fact that it encourages 5 to 10 dwelling units to the acre. It says a modest density should be encouraged that's similar to the typical development that occurred during the 1930s through 1940s. I think they're really referencing single-family detached homes when they say that, because most of that element is concerned with new urbanist kind of planning. But it does go on to say this density, such as 5 to 10 homes per acre, should make best use of available land while avoiding overly dense development and parking problems. Essentially, the density that's represented here, if you took the whole parcel and the commercial and you distributed it on AR1 zone property, it would take about 235 acres, or 6 times as much land as this would take. And this is, of course, right in the middle of a developing almost metro area.
One other point about the design itself, and that is simply that the multifamily buildings do provide open space that's almost three times greater than that that's required. And I'm referring to the whole project. There are 16.3 acres provided versus 5.62 acres required, and I don't mean to confuse things because I am talking about the whole site as opposed to the specific rezoning parcels or, you know, so forth. And that's kind of my piece of this in a nutshell, and I can answer any questions you have.
Gentlemen, we can hear you up here if you don't mind. If you need to have a discussion, I'd appreciate if you would do it out in the foyer. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
I'm going to bring Mr. Tunnel up at this time, and Mr. Tunnel will describe the request that he's had for the demand or demand that he's had for the housing types and the types of services that can be proposed at this particular site.
Robert Tunnel, Baywood, LLC.
I just
want
to spend a couple minutes to walk through the site plan, and we'll look at the site plan and how the two separate rezoning or conditional use applications tie into the site plan. We did, as Mr. Key referenced earlier, take a lot of time to look at the comprehensive plan community design element and really take a lot of suggestions and design elements out of that and try and incorporate into this. One of which is the boulevard, the main boulevard entrance, with the commercial up front. These four buildings would have first floor commercial with residential above, similar to Village of Five Points. Another element of the community design from the comp plan was to have not the parking not right on the front of the building or, you know, but around the side and the back of the building, so that when you come in, there's not a sea of parking there. You actually go behind the building and then enter from the rear. The boulevard comes through the site, and it hits a T-intersection here, which is the main focal point is a community building, and a swimming pool, and a playground, which then overlooks the stormwater management pond. Now, as also that Frank referenced earlier, the commercial here, these are smaller buildings. They're commercial being the first floor. It's neighborhood-type commercial, small office buildings, and small commercial similar to coffee shops, things like that, that we don't have a specific use for or specific tenants or anything like that lined up, but that's the type. And I guess historically, the application for the C1 here, I think it was 1995 was when these two parcels were rezoned, B1 and C1. With that, there was concern at that time as to the type of commercial that would go in here. And what we did at that time, we actually placed self-imposed deed restrictions on the property that the types of commercial that would be in these buildings would not be fast food restaurants that were drive-through, that would not be gas stations or convenience stores, the type of high-traffic commercial applications. So they have been already placed on the site, and they can't be removed without DLDOT's permission. So I doubt that'll ever happen. And then we took a considerable amount of time to look at and plan for recreational amenities in this project. As I mentioned before, there's a community center, playground, swimming pool area. Also, this area here, this pathway system serves two purposes. It would be a residential kind of 10-foot wide, 10-12-foot wide kind of pathway system through the community, but it also serve as a secondary fire lane. So this would be, you know, pavers or paved pathway around the stormwater pond. And there would be, similar to as we have in another community, there's actually a series of exercise stations around that. So not only is it a walking trail, but at the same time, there would be some more active recreation around there. Now, around the stormwater pond, there's open space. We took into account, along this property line, a 30-foot buffer, and then along
these two property lines here a 50-foot buffer. And then just a little more specific on the building types, I think these images are in your books here. But these are some renderings of the villas. There's two buildings types. There's a 23-unit and a 12-unit building. The 23-unit buildings are pushed up towards Long Neck Road, and then the smaller 12-unit buildings are in the back on the AR1 zone land and surrounding the stormwater pond. As you can see, these buildings here would be the 23-unit, and then from here back would all be smaller 12-unit buildings, the associated renderings. The floor plan and layout in these units, sorry, excuse the shape of this board, but units are anywhere from 13 to 1,500 square feet, two and three bedroom units. It's a unit type that we do not currently offer, but we have had over the past couple of years considerable number of people coming in and asking for this type of unit. The multifamily Baywood now, the townhomes range anywhere from about an 1,800 square foot townhome up to a 2,400 square foot townhome. So this would be a little smaller. It would be less maintenance. Even with the multifamily, the townhomes at Baywood now, there is a courtyard that people maintain and a more, I guess, limited common elements associated with that townhome. This would be a much, much lower, almost no maintenance type of unit.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I do have three documents that do not necessarily relate to this application in a sense that they are not related geographically, but they may be of interest to you in your deliberation, and I'm not sure whether or not you will permit me to introduce them, but they include from your own records a copy of ordinance number 955, which was change of zone number 1189, granted in 1993. Ordinance number 1052, which was approved in May of 1995 and known as change of zone application number 1261. And Mr. Tunnel made reference to a declaration of restrictions, and these restrictions are also in my possession. If the chair will permit me, and I know we have a 10-day rule, but if you feel that these are important to the deliberation of this application.
I think they might be. I'm going to ask you to give them to Mr. Robertson, and he'll take them. To look at them and pass them on if he feels it's something we need to see.
Gentlemen, I'm going to introduce now Mr. Polkowitz, who you know from prior application, and he's going to get into the engineering considerations in the design of the project, the PLUS reports, and how all this comes together.
Good evening. Robert did a very good job going through the site plan, so he took most of my presentation.
Well, that's good because we're not going to listen to it again.
Good, that's absolutely fine. So I'll touch on PLUS first. PLUS was originally submitted. Our comments were received in actually 2005. We resubmitted to them in 2006 with a letter. Some of the highlights include one of the comments was they had an issue with the pond being along Long Neck Road. You can see that there's no more ponds there. The pond. Probably aware this pond is existing, so there's no other new ponds proposed along the road. The site was reviewed for wetlands, and there's no wetlands on site. And a TMDL analysis was done, though not included in here, and it meets the 40%, plus there's the new pollution control strategies that we have to meet, which was to formalize that process anyways. Environmentally sensitive. As mentioned, it's an environmentally sensitive district. Again, all this is in the book, but I'll touch on some of the highlights. As mentioned before, water will be provided by tidal water utilities. It's the intent that sewer be provided by inland bays, understanding we have to de-annex. The site has been visited and investigated regarding the endangered species. Previously mentioned, there's no wetlands on site, therefore there's no disturbance. We have dealt out approval actually on the entrance plan already, so I think DJ will touch further on that. And as noted by PLUS, this project will not affect any historic properties in the area. Stormwater management. Notice on the site there's a very large stormwater pond that's intended to be a wet pond that will provide the quantity control on the site. We do, and at the request of Robert, we are going to do additional biofiltration where we can in green areas to provide additional quality controls on site. That will also help us with our pollution control strategies. Robert already mentioned the exercise path access. We have the main entrance that DJ will talk about a little bit. We're also tying into a stub left over by the Baywood communities so that these two communities will be connected. And Robert, correct me if I'm wrong, they'll all have access to Baywood facilities?
Yeah, and vice versa.
So they'll share amenities. One thing Robert mentioned was a buffer on this side. The buffer is actually an existing 50-foot strip on Baywood that buffers the two projects. And I believe that's it, unless I'm missing anything there. Dennis?
Thank you, Jason. Last, I'd like to call up Mr. Hughes, who is the traffic engineer, and he will give you an overview of the traffic considerations that go into the development of this particular project.
Hi, DJ Hughes, professional engineer with Davis Bone and Friedel. I just want to start by saying the TIS was done for the entire project. It wasn't done separately for the applications you're hearing tonight. It incorporated the entire project. And I just want to give a brief overview of the TIS process. And if you all happen to know this, and I'm telling you stuff you already know, then please tell me. But basically, the DLDOT determines the scope of work based on your project size and type. That scope of work includes a number of intersections to be studied, the peak hours to be studied, like the community peak hours or the summer Saturday peak hours, the future years that you'll evaluate the traffic conditions, and the committed and or pending developments that are in the area to address the cumulative impacts of all the developments. Traffic data is collected and submitted for review to DLDOT. Once they approve it, a preliminary TIS is done where you add, they provide growth factors for the background growth in the area, and you add annual growth factors on top of each roadway's traffic. Then on top of that, you add the committed and pending development traffic, and then on top of that, you add your site traffic. Once all that is done and approved, you submit the final TIS to DLDOT, where you analyze each intersection that they required you to study, and you also propose or recommend improvements that may be needed, whether it's for your site entrance based on their entrance design standards or to address any potential level of service deficiencies. Once that's submitted to them, they review it, and then they in turn, as I think you all are aware, make recommendations to the planning director, Mr. Lank, and those recommendations can vary and have a lot of improvements or requirements for pedestrians, bicycles, transit, all sorts of things in them. And once that's done, basically that completes the TIS process with DLDOT. And the TIS was done and reviewed for the Baywood Town Center project. It addressed the weekday AM, PM, and the summer Saturday peak hours. The off-site intersection level service that was projected in the TIS and agreed with by DLDOT was level service D or better at all the site intersections once planned improvements were completed. Off-site intersection improvements included exclusive lanes of Route 5 and 24 at the time when the study was done. Those lanes, there weren't exclusive lanes. You didn't have a left through and a right for every movement. So those improvements were done, and that intersection operates much better now. Also, at the intersection of Long Neck Road, Banks Road, and School Lane, there are planned improvements to add exclusive lanes for each movement there. So every car that's going to make a left or through a right will have its own turn lane. Those improvements are actually they've actually more or less been designed, and they're coordinating with DLDOT to work out the final design plan so that they can be constructed. for the project entrances. As Jason said, basically we have the one direct access, which is opposite the Bayshore subdivision, which the Bayshore subdivision is here. So we have one direct access, which will be improved to provide a left turn lane, a through lane, and a right turn lane in each direction on Long Neck Road. And there will also be a separate right turn lane and then a shared left and through coming out of the site.
And as also, as Jason mentioned, there are interconnections to the existing Baywoods community, which that's good for several reasons. One, if you just happen to have a buddy that lives in Baywood, you don't have to go out on Long Neck Road or Route 24 to go see him, or if you want to go to golf or the restaurant, and then vice versa. If we have offices or commercial in here, if you live in the Baywood community, you won't have to go out onto Long Neck Road or Route 24 to access the services. And you can also get to Banks Road through the interconnection. But at the main site entrance, in addition to exclusive lanes, Delta required a signal agreement be entered into so that if and when they determine a signal is warranted, it will be installed, and the developer will pay for half of it, and the developer of Bayshore Subdivision will pay for the other half of the signal. And we do have Delta entrance approval, and both the entrance approval and the TIS that were done based on a more traffic-intensive land use than what we have out there, or what we have proposed today. So in that sense, they're over-designed. We did receive a DelDOT entrance permit, and the entrance is bonded with DelDOT. We do not have to go back to DelDOT since our traffic is less than what was approved. If it was more, we may have to go back to them, but since it's less, we do not. And I believe that's about all I have. The one thing I do want to point out, since we're just dealing with the two condition, the B1 rezoning and conditional use, and the B1 conditional use, the rezoning with the conditional use is only for 120 units. I think under AR1 they could probably do 32 single family homes. And for B1, the conditional use to allow multifamily, I believe, is 23 units, and you could definitely fit a lot more traffic intensive use on B1 land than 23 multifamily units. So that's all I have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, DJ. Gentlemen, I just want to make a couple concluding remarks. First off, I a little housekeeping. I want to make sure that the book, the drawings that we handed out, which were copies of the boards and the submittals I made to Mr. Robertson, are made a part of the record. The things that I'd like to point out to you, and I'm looking at now the current development lands map that Frank prepared. The curiosity of all this is, and I know that we've been here recently on larger commercial projects in a different area of Sussex County, and this area is unique. It is the third largest metropolitan area in Sussex County, and yet it is not incorporated. And it has developed as a crossroads community. Keep in mind that where Nanticoke Crossing is, where there's a grocery store in 25, 23, and 24 meet, more or less is the center of the circle that Frank referred to. And if this project and all of the projects are developed, the traffic flow will be towards this particular intersection. It doesn't have a negative effect on Millsboro or Lewis or anything north of Love Creek. It brings everything to this particular focal point, which I think is unique to this particular application. The second point that I would like to make concerning that particular map is that there are no major shopping centers that have large anchor stores in them. You have a Harris Teeter shopping center with a little strip mall attached to it, and various things such as Nanticoke Crossing up and down and around through the Long Neck area, but you don't have that type of large commercial big box appearance that appears on some other projects. By way of argument for you, or in closing argument, that is, it is consistent with the comprehensive plan. I encourage you to take a few moments to take a look at the presentation that's made at the end of the booklet that Frank assembled that shows all the various elements that have been complied with by this particular project. I ask you to keep in mind that there was no objection to this project by the PLUS review.
There was a traffic impact study by DelDOT, and all of the work that was either proposed under the accumulative effect of all of these traffic impact studies is either done or bonded to be done. And lastly, again, Mr. Johnson, I apologize for the math error. It's 143 units on two sites with a density of less than 8 dwelling units an acre. And for the benefit of Mr. Palkowitz, we would put sidewalks on all three sides of the roads in order to comply with any reasonable conditions you may impose. There are findings of fact that are attached for your consideration and to be used as a basis for a draft. And we're available, all five of us, to answer any questions you may have.
All right, sir. Well, we'll see if anyone has any, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for my mathematical mind, Mr. Schrader, I know we're not doing a site plan on the other stuff, but how many total units are you talking about?
If you talk about the A1, the B1, and the C1,
yep.
It's 354.
354, not 388.
Right. Okay. And that's I'll screw this up. 120 and 23, right?
Yes, sir.
120 and 23 down here.
And the purpose for the B1 is solely so that you then can apply for the approval as a conditional use to have the multifamily housing.
We can't. That's how we get to the multifamily dwellings.
So there's not any intention to use that B1 to do anything else.
We have B1.
But the other B1 section, like in the back, that's an AR.
Is to get us to the multifamily dwellings.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is that the density that you're proposing is comparable to some of the surrounding properties, including the Bayshore project?
Yes, sir, and I have it at 7.7.
And has there been any discussion with the folks in Baywoods, in particular to the connecting road? Because when I visit the site, it's a nice drive, you know, obviously through Baywoods, and then I get to the connecting road, and that looks nice, and I see the vista of a open field, and I wonder what those folks thought when they bought those houses on that Stub Street.
I suspect that Mr. Tunnel has done so. We'll find out.
We had shown him.
Yeah, sir, you have to come up to the microphone. Sorry.
And I'm going to introduce Mr. Tunnel Jr.
Okay. Yeah, Rob Tunnel, thank you. That was in phase three primarily, but we informed the residents or potential residents that they're what we were going to do there. And we talked about a small commercial area we call them villas. So, I mean, everything's copacetic with them, as far as I know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're not talking about apartments. We're talking about apartment-style condos, or are we talking about, what kind of housing units are we talking about?
Mr. Tunnel III will answer that.
Yeah, I guess you would call them apartment-style condos. They would not be, the potential homeowner would purchase the unit. And then there would be, very similar to the Baywood townhomes, there would be a monthly fee that would cover all the upkeep and maintenance of the grounds around it, the use of the amenities, et cetera. And just like the existing covenants in Baywood, you would not be allowed to sublet or lease these apartments to other people, on a monthly or an annual basis. So they would be owned units, but yet there would be no, I guess, renters or seasonal renting like that.
So unlike the units at the Village of Five Points, many of which are actually investor-owned and subletted, that will not be the case with yours.
That is correct. And that's what we, even at the, with the economic times and everything, this past August when we met with our homeowners, we raised the point that, should we discuss opening up units and everything to renting? If somebody's got a second home, maybe they could make a little money on the side. And that was, we received a nearly unanimous no on that at the meeting. So, I mean, keeping in character with the rest of Baywood, we do not want to offer these for rent at all.
So will there be a separate homeowners or condo association?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And again, dealing with the numbers, Mr. Schrader, I noticed that in your book there was a reference to a preliminary approval or conceptual approval dating back to December of 2003 where there would be two parking spots per unit. Is that what you're going to continue to propose is two parking spots per unit. And with that original approval back in 2003, was there ever a final approval received?
I'll answer the first part of that regarding the parking. The parking currently shown meets the current code, the current zoning code for parking. Not the two spaces.
Excuse me. It's three?
There's as you get more units, you get reduction in there's number of bedrooms. But it meets the current code, the current parking code, parking requirements. And just your second question?
I don't believe there has been a final approval.
Mr. Robertson, what happens when there's a conceptual approval and there's never a final approval received for a project?
Well, I mean, if there's not been a final approval, there's nothing to stop an applicant from coming in with something different.
So there's not a time frame in which they have to receive the final approval?
On a conceptual approval, I don't recall that there was one placed on it. I don't think.
I don't recall one either. And the representation on this is the as was preliminarily approved in 2003, correct?
It's been through numerous iterations.
No.
I mean, the front current C1 portion, it's close to the to what was preliminary approved. I know on the 2003 plan in this area and in this area, there were actually two larger buildings that were 30-unit buildings that we reduced those and just made them, you know, the 23-unit building. So I think that's the only major difference. Other than that, this same configuration exists. Depending on how the overall zoning and conditional use goes, we would then come back for a final site plan approval at that time. After, you know, we still need to do some engineering to determine is this the final exact shape of the stormwater pond, et cetera, for that.
So then I'm hearing that there's not a concern that almost 6 years have lapsed since the conceptual approval was given on that front section. Let's talk a little bit about Plus. Has Plus seen this whole project? Because we talked about Plus was back in 05 and then 06 you responded, and now this is 09 and I'm hearing changes. What did Plus actually hear or see?
They saw a similar plan. In fact, it was probably a little bit more dense at the time. But basically, it's almost the same plan. They did see the entire development, the A, B's, and C's, and it was very similar to what we have today.
But at a smaller scale.
This is actually a little bit less dense than what they were given. And in fact, the original Plus requested a C1 in the back and on the side. We were rezoning, so it'd be just in the back. This application was revised to do a B1.
Well, the reason why I say is I know we have a gentleman standing in the back who has been through Plus a couple of times for a project that partly due to time, partly due to changes. So I just wasn't sure if Plus had seen the project that we're looking at today.
They probably not have seen this. They have not seen this exact project. Something very similar.
Okay.
Can I expand upon that?
Please do.
But the numbers that they looked at were same or less?
They were higher, what they looked at.
Well, I mean now.
For the, what no, the numbers are less now.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any more questions right now.
All right, sir. Mr. Burton.
I have no questions at this time.
Okay. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I understand the application fairly well. Do have a few questions. One regarding you will be preparing one of those mandated budgets for the Homeowners Association?
Under the new law, Duke, Iowa, we will have to do the mandatory budget and comply with the formation requirements of the Owners Association and so forth.
Thank you. One of the 99.9C is the consideration for safe vehicular and pedestrian traffic and movement throughout the neighborhoods. Do you, if you anticipate that there is any golf cart traffic, will you draw on your past experiences to ensure as nearly as possible that movement be safe?
I think the answer is yes, and we'll give Mr. Tunnel the third up to answer that one.
Yeah, the answer is yes. I mean, one thing that has been required by DLDOT but actually does not show on the site plan, there is a 10-foot wide multimodal pathway. Actually, it looks more like a sidewalk here. So there will be a multimodal pathway that will then connect into the existing pathway to this intersection. In addition, this internal kind of pedestrian pathway that I talked about would be wide enough for golf cart access as well.
Thank you. Any considerations there near that entranceway for a school bus and or a DART type bus stop shelter?
It's part of the DLDOT, approval that we would have a bus stop near the entrance, yes. It said DART, but at the same time, I would think we could easily make that a combination school/DART bus stop. On the undeveloped property right now, within probably 20 feet of the existing location, there is an existing DART bus stop there now, a sign and a bench on the side of the road. So that would be then, incorporated into next to the entrance and made more of a structure that was required by DLDOT.
Thank you. That's all.
All right, sir. Mr. Ross.
I noticed the church is adjacent on the corner of the property. Is there any discussion with the church about having a pathway or a walkway adjoining directly without going out on the road?
I have not talked to the church directly about the pathway. I know we would end up having to run the multimodal pathway to the edge of our property along the road. But right now we have not talked to them about it in more of an interconnection.
Often when people move in, they'll relocate to a church close by, and since it's in walking distance, it might be something to think about doing. And then the other suggestion I would have, I don't see it on the site plan, is in situations like this where we have some density, mailbox stations are helpful to the Postal Service in some circumstances, and maybe a discussion with the post office about whether that's feasible here or something desirable would be worth doing. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Burton, you got something?
Yeah, I have one question. Mr. Tone, you mentioned that this multimodal path was going to run all the way down, but it only shows it essentially to be one.
Yeah, I guess that's one thing. The path does run along the entire frontage of the property. I know on here it shows it where it kind of hits those trees and stops, but it does. I mean, DLDOT does make it makes us run. It'll make us run the path all the way down to the existing entrance.
I think what's shown on there is the approved DLDOT plans, which don't include the two parcels on the right side. So that's why it stops at those parcels. It will obviously have to extend along the entire frontage.
Mr. Light?
No question.
Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Council?
No questions. Thanks.
All right, gentlemen, we thank you. If you all take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of change of zone number 1660 and or conditional use number 1797? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to change of zone number 1660 and or conditional use number 1797? Anyone on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of your Thursday evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.